wants to clean and debone them. I'll do it. What gives?
You want to do it?
Just wait till you see what I've got.
It's the Wonder Boner. 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 The Wonder Boner.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. Jay Bird, how is your Wonder Boner? Do you have those in stock now at the store, or what are you stocking them? Huh?
Oh, of course we are. We always have those in stock, Steve. How are you doing tonight?
I am wore out to the floor out. Folks, you know, I know, Jay knows, everybody knows, we're super late on the podcast. I apologize. I've been crazy busy. And then, believe it or not, recorded the episode and deleted it. So that is what is going on. So this is attempt number two. Due to technical difficulties.
You gotta love computers, man.
Should we call it? We'll call it technical difficulties there. I promise. I am sorry we're late. We will be back on track for next Wednesday. Anyway, first and foremost, been doing some filming. Guys, if you haven't figured out yet, shooting a show for the Muskie Shop. It will be Muskie Shop TV. It's going to be on their YouTube channel. Check it out. If you're not subscribed already to the Muskie Shop's YouTube channel, now would be the time. And get over there. And I want to hear from you guys on what you want to learn, what you want to see, what you want to do. What we're doing for the show is, this is not about, hey, let's go watch Steve catch a fish. There's enough of that. You know, who cares? I mean, yeah, you're going to see me catch some fish, but you also are going to, I'm going to attempt to try to teach you how to work certain baits or do this or do that. So any tips or tactics you guys want to see on video, let me know so I can really focus in on that. We should be out, what, Jay, the first weekend of June, we're believing? Somewhere in that.
We're targeting June 1st. Yeah. I think June 1st is, you know, and this thing's going to run weekly.
Every week.
Forever.
Forever.
Weekly. Big fish. With Big Steve.
Big Fish. No, it's not. That's definitely not the name. I hope not. Big Fish with Big Steve.
It's not going to be called that, but it's the truth. I mean, just what, 2 days ago, you got, I shouldn't even say anything.
Don't even say it. We got some funsies on film already, kids. But what I want to know is, like I said, the whole point of the podcast, the whole point of the app, the whole point of everything is helping you guys catch more fish. What do you want to see? What baits do you want to learn? Let us know. And so we appreciate any input on that. Steve Paul reloaded. Reloaded.
Speaking of Joe Bucher,
Reloaded
is on this year.
Blues Fest Reloaded.
It's back. It was canceled last year due to the pandemic, and it's going to be back. What, two weekends after the Muskie Bash?
Muskie Bash.
The last Saturday, I think, in July in St. Germain, Wisconsin.
That's a lot of fun. It is the Joe Bucher Blues Fest. If you've ever wanted to see Joe Bucher playing blues tunes, now's your chance. It's a great event. He puts a big band and all that stuff.
Full band, yeah.
Full band. They got it maracas. They got timbales.
Good time. Lots of food.
Jay plays slide kazoo.
I'm not playing. No.
Are you a dancer this year? Then?
I'm going to try to make it. I know my family's up that weekend, but hey, are you going to still be around for that?
I think.
I didn't ask you.
I believe.
It might be the day you leave, like, ish, right around there.
Working on it. We'll figure it out.
Well, if you're still there, we got to try to get you on stage. That would be awesome.
As a go-go dancer.
Well, yeah.
I could do it. I ain't scared.
Booker's got a lot of extra Stratocasters he can loan you on for a couple tunes.
Or a couple tunes. He probably got it strung up with nines. Anyway, I play real play guitar like mine. Give me 11s, 12s. Anyway, that'll be a lot of fun. So check it out. It's Joe Bucher's Blues Fest. That's coming up. Of course, don't forget Muskie Shop Bash on July 17th. That will be the Smitties, me and Joe Bucher, and a cast of other characters doing stupid things. But don't wait until July if you need a reel, apparently. So...
Yeah.
Word on the street, and this is not a, hey, go buy a reel. if you need a reel, if you're like, I need a new reel this season, I'm going to wait till so-and-so or wait till opener.
Yeah, I'm looking at this one. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, I'm torn between this Daiwa and this Shimano or this Abu or whatever it may be. If we got it in stock now, I would advise getting it because mm-hmm. the summer is going to be bleak.
Yeah.
You know, the forecasts are not looking good for imported stuff like that. There's a lot of factors in play, but
yeah.
They're going to be scarce. Let's put it that way. That's what everyone is telling us, and we're trying to get as many as we can.
That's the inside scoop.
I don't know, man. It's not looking great. I think by July, you're going to see some limited availability and overall in reels. Some rods, too. Same thing.
Well, that's the anything that's imported or uses imported components still is behind.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So, like I said, it doesn't matter. If you're looking at any reel, get it now. I'm fortunate enough, I had to walk through the aisles of a local Wally World. And, of course, I meandered to the fishing section, and they were pretty much pillaged as well. You talk about a place, and we're talking spinning reels and just garbage reels. And it was just like, they didn't even have a Black Max left on the shelf, so... Yeah, Jay, would it be an overstep to say what you guys got is what you got for the time being, or is it just going to be just slow, smaller batches of stuff hitting retailers, you think?
No, it's they're coming in fragments like they have been all year for the last year, really. We got a ton of stuff on order, and every once in a while we get, 20 or 30 Daiwas in. You know, we got, I think, 39 Tranks 400s the other day, just a portion of what we wanted.
Right.
They weren't the high gears. They were just the regular gear. Most people want the high gear for whatever reason, but, at least we're getting some here and there.
Right.
But
so keep...
It's not enough.
Yeah, but if you're on the fence, it is the time to get there. Also, too, I screwed up when I said I messed up with the podcast. I had a clip from the Muskie Meteorologist. He'll be starting next week. We're going to have a little bit of a weather breakdown so you guys understand the forecast every week because it's such a cool little deal. He's going to be doing that. Anyway, we are so backed up on questions that we are just going to Q&A. We're going to try to get through this. Next week, we'll be back to our normal idiotic selves. Again, I apologize for being late. Don't kill me. First up is Robert the Pollock. He says... Got my 174 tooth-proof wire. I want to make some no BS leaders. What are you doing? Are you putting welded rings on both sides? Is it a split ring? How do you configure a no BS? So let's start with, what is a no BS leader?
I was going to say that. Yeah.
That is from Book Daddy Areno. He had lost a fish on a river in Canada to a busted snap.
Yeah.
He figured out
real quick. I heard that story. Yeah. He figured out real quick. It's just like, I'm not taking that chance again.
Yeah. No more. Take components out of your signal chain. So what he's doing is a wire leader that will have either a welded ring at the top where you're going to tie your line to, or just tie right to the leader, your choice. I would recommend if you're using like a thicker diameter, thicker gauge wire, there's enough surface area to tie there that you're not worried about it cutting. I use a welded ring on mine, and then what you're going to do is you're going to put a split ring on the end where your snap will be. And so instead of opening a snap, you're going to use your split ring pliers to put it around the nose of the bait. The purpose of that is snaps fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
You open it, you close it all day long. You're fatiguing that metal. If you ever take like a coat hanger or something to just bend it back and forth, the metal will break. And these snaps are not like, they're not forging these in the fire of Mountain Doom or anything. I promise you, most snaps are made out of Chinese pot metal. You know, it's like, let's make some snaps. Let's use these chips from when we were making, kids' strollers.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, right.
You know, that's not grade A, first run stuff there. So I would not sit there and trust a snap. When I use snaps, I actually use way bigger snaps to get them beefier. I don't think stealth is a big component, I think, when it comes to snaps, swivels, leaders. But
yeah, you've said that before. Yeah, and all you need is a split ring pliers in your boat.
Right.
You know,
and
you're good to go. And
what's this killer ones? Zenron Z? What's the blue handle ones, Jay? You guys sell them. They're like really good.
Zeron. Yeah. They're like $17. You can't beat that. If you're looking for one, get the blue handled one. Yeah, it'll do them all.
Well, and those will last a lifetime, and they do it every time. I hate split ring pliers. I've had so many bad pairs of them. It's just like you're sitting there fighting it all day. So
yeah, where they bend a little bit, they're just a little out of sync, and they're not tight. The tolerances aren't tight. Yeah, then it's just like throw it away, get a new one.
I know. So that's the best split ring pliers. That is a great system if you're worried if you're fishing big fish or you're worried about losing a fish. That is the way to do it. There is no BS in that system. Hunter says, "Do you lose split?" Oh, here you go. Hunter says, "Do you use split rings and a solid ring leader for your bucktails or spinner baits?" And do you
common question?
Yeah, hold on. And bucktails and spinner bait, or do you tie directly to your snaps? Okay, so with a split ring, right, for your bucktails, it's really no advantage. Right. And I think what he's asking is, do you put a split ring on the end of your bucktail or do you just attach directly to the bucktail, right, for your leader? You're not going to have an advantage with a split ring in that system. If I'm bucktail fishing, I'm going no BS anyway. Right. So these two questions are sort of similar in some regard. You know, it's so easy to get it around a bucktail, like the little loop end. It's nothing. So just go with a straight wire leader and a split ring. It's funny. Those are back to back. All right. Jack says, "I re-listened to your figure eight rant podcast." And he said, "I often change between ovals and eights depending on which rod lure combo I'm using." He said, "My hook sets are often great from the eight as they're moving out and away from the boat. On the oval, on the second turn, you're pulling the rod towards the boat." I guess if you're right-handed, yeah. He said, "I lost the biggest fish I've ever seen in a lake that I consider to be my home waters in this scenario. The second turn of the oval towards the boat after a perfect hanging dive, I flubbed the hook set. How do you handle this?" Okay, so in my head, he's bringing it in. He's in the outside oval. I don't think it matters in an eight or an oval in that scenario. Right. And if you're going like, "I lost the biggest fish I've ever seen," and it's like, I don't know if it you'd have to see what the fish is doing or have to see what's going on. You know what I'm saying? To understand that.
Yeah. Sometimes they nip at it. And I mean, they really don't have their mouths open anywhere. They're not trying to eat, but yeah.
And the one thing I'll say is this, he says, "I flubbed the hook set."
Mm-hmm.
I don't set the hook in the figure eight. Right. I let them grab it, and usually by the time the rod is bent to the point of extremis and the flex is gone, the thing's hooked before you even know it, is the case often for me. I'm not really launching back into those fish, right? When he grabs it, you're going to come back at it, but hope you're saying you're not like loading up on these things in the egg, right? That's not my game plan. You know, you can give them a tug, but usually, man, if they grab it in the eight and you've got that leader tight to the rod tip like you should, he's hooked. You know, it happens so fast in most cases. And I'm not talking about these ones that are coming in jacking their jaws, or, you know, the ones that come in like a basking shark, their mouth is open, like, wah.
But, well, you know, definitely I would recommend using a long rod, as long as a rod as you can get away with, because that's going to do nothing but help you in the whole.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
figure eighting scenario and fighting the fish.
Right. And
that's, you know, the longer the rod, the better, the more that thing's loading and bending, you know,
it's like a toad looking for a load. And that's a thing. I mean, you know, hopefully you're fishing 9-footers. I know he's saying he's going between different rod and reel combos. I mean, without being there and seeing it firsthand of that scenario, what you're doing, the mechanics. Okay. So, when I went on my big figure eight rant, and we'll definitely have some videos on this in this show coming up. But on figure eights, the thing I can tell you is just really, really, really making sure that those mechanics are sound and solid, even when there's not a fish there on bad ones. So when you're in the heat of the moment, your mechanics are good, right? It that's the only thing I can see without being there and seeing that scenario play out. Why is it, you know, you're saying on the second, on the outside turn, or, you know, your second turn on an oval, seeing those mechanics, the best thing I can tell you to do is watch and emulate people that are good at it, right? Watch Booker's videos. Chaz Martin's a good figure eighter as well. You know, most of these guys that, you know, their names are good eighters, you know,
emulate. Don't continue your figure eight too when you're setting the hook. You know, go against the fish.
Well, that's
absolutely swimming.
Right, right. Yeah, don't keep leading the way.
I don't know if that's natural. You know, well, it's just like, I remember my first figure eight muskie that I lost it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big fish. And this is, you know, a long time ago. And it's just like, I just remember feeling sick. And it's just like, I know what I did. I just pulled it out of its mouth. You know, and it just barely grabbed it. It was stupid, but I didn't know any better.
Well, and that's the thing is just when they grab in the eight and they're really grabbing, they're hard to lose, right? If they've really grabbed the bait, if they're nipping, obviously they're easy to lose. But yeah, don't, I mean, I just can't think. And like I said, maybe if I went back and watched video of myself fishing and stuff, I would see me like setting hard into them. In my mind, when they grab it in the eight, I'm already in free spool. I don't really do much. You know, I mean, if they come in, they hit the thing. But also, too, this is a mechanic that I use and I rely on. I fish generally a 12-inch leader, right? And when I'm figure eighting, there's only 12 inches of leader out. I'm using a solid steel ring, so I'm right against the tip. So when he grabs it, he's just grabbing rod and bait. You know what I'm saying? There's no wiggle room on that. There's no side to side in a big long leader or anything like that. I mean, I just have it tight to that. So when that, by the time that fish grabs that thing, and if you can think of a fish that's going, let's say he goes past the rod, he grabs the bait and he keeps going forward. By the time he's grabbed that bait, it's so fast that thing's in the back corner of his mouth. You see what I'm saying, Jay? Whereas like you don't have a lot of leader out, so I would recommend, in, you know, and again, it's not particularly in that case, but you know, if you're struggling in the figure eight, tighten things up. It's my truck and trailer routine. I say, you know, if you got a truck and a trailer and you're trying to pull a boat or a trailer that's misloaded and you got too much thing that baits up there wagging around or stalling in the corners, that's another thing, like I've said on that figure eight ramp. But, you know, if you've got a short leader and you're positioned right, by the time he grabs it, the hook's somewhere. That seems to be the case for me. I will move on and we will do more figure eight ranting. Kyle says hello. I've been wondering. Hello.
Hi, Kyle.
Hello. I've been wondering, when people say that they move lakes throughout the day, what's the reason behind it? What is it that makes you guys find a certain lake or fish a certain lake over another lake or move during the course of the day? Thanks for all the info. Cheers, Kyle. Jay, you are from the land of lake jumpers.
That's true. Yeah.
What
makes a person want to jump a lake midstream during the afternoon?
Have you ever jumped a lake in your car? Have you ever just
there's some small ones around here, but no. That's a really good question. And I mean, I've done it a million times. You know, it's like if I have a buddy up or something and I'm trying to put them on fish and it's not happening. You know, sometimes it's a moronic move. It's like, let's go somewhere else. But on the other hand, you know, we have so many different lake types around here.
Yep.
The Wisconsin River / Rainbow Flowage is, less than a mile from my house. Okay. Then you go the other direction. You've got Big St. Germain, lakes like that, which are decent sized, which are moderately fertile and moderately stained. And we've got some Gin Clear lakes. So it's like three totally different systems.
Right.
Yeah. You can jump and go, especially if it's early or late in the year, where lakes really do have where it's a lot easier to determine what kind of status they're in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the shallow, you know, dirty water lakes are obviously warming up quicker around here, and they're probably going to be, the fish will be further along, a little bit more active in the early part of the season. So, yes, lake jumping can be critical. And if you have the luxury of fishing in northern Wisconsin or parts of Minnesota or something where there's a large concentration of lakes, it's that makes it fun, you know. Well, and, you fish for 2 hours and it's just like,
if it ain't happening,
grab a snack and relax and, you know, drive 10 minutes down the road and you're on a completely different cool musky lake.
Well, and that's the thing of like, if you, reiterating the same point, which is like, you could go and fish on the Cisco chain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is big, clear water.
Pretty clear, yeah.
Right, or whatever. You know, it's clear to me. You go out there, yeah, fish that, and then you jump in the truck, and you can go be on Tannic water, and they're going to be completely different environments. So, Kyle, what they're referring to, especially guides up there, you go to a certain body of water, and if it's not happening, you don't have to stay there and beat it. You know, some of us, and a lot of the listeners, you're in positions like I am where you got, this is it. If I don't figure it out on this body of water today, then I'm in deep doo-doo. But, you know, if you've got lakes all around you, you just jump in the truck and go, oh, I'm going to go over to this thing because it's shallow and stained and they might be more fired up. And you can just bop around till you find a bite, you know. I'm jealous of that, Jay. I'm just going to
say.
Very
true.
You know?
Yeah, but maybe that makes you a little bit better fisherman, too, when it's just like, okay, I'm stuck on this body of water. Yeah,
that's the argument.
We need to go from 12 feet. We need to go to this, like, primo 8-foot area. Well, that's a mile upriver, or it's a mile on the other side of this lake, or wherever you're fishing.
Well,
and you can figure things out. I'm sure you think that way.
Well,
you
I'll tell you, we lost the segment where I was just giving him hell the other day, but my friend Cody Dalton.
Cody Dalton.
He and I have talked about that a bunch of times, that we don't have that luxury, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, forgive me, but I think guys that are you know, you're confined to just bodies of water, you're a little bit more perceptive and a little bit more persistent. I've talked to some Wisconsin guides where, you know, basically you're going out there, and it depends on your client or your day. You go, I'm driving around trying to find a lake, and there's a bucktail bike to fit my needs. And you can do it, you know.
You can, right.
You don't have to be as versatile, you know. You don't have to be like, you know, let's break out this or do that or do this. Or, you know, I mean, I can tell you a bike Cody and I both have discussed that we've been on, which is not even a musky lure bite, right? It's secret squirrel stuff, but you're going, you have to make adjustments in your game the entire time, because there's no trailering the boat. There's no going, I'm going to drive over to a little lake pee-pee, you know, and launch over here because they're not biting over here on Succotoban. You know, it's just, you don't have that luxury. So you guys that are Pennsylvania guys, Southern guys, you know what I'm talking about. The other musky lake's 2 hours away. You know, it's just like,
so, I would say most people probably in that situation, you know, it's just like, you know, think if you're, you know, south of Chicago at all, or you're even in Northern Illinois, it's like, okay, we're going to Kincaid.
That's it.
You know, and that's about it.
And you got to figure it out. So again,
you got to figure it out.
There's benefits, and there's also just, I mean, and there's some days they've got zip ties around their mouth and they're not going to eat no matter what you do. You know, so there's something to be learned in both of those scenarios. Anyway, Adam. Yep, and hit them. What is up, guys? So I have a habit of fishing in 10 feet of water and going for shorelines and drop-offs in various bars. I have a problem with various bars as well. When do you know to go shallow or deeper? How long do you fish a targeted structure before you go deeper or shallower? What are good baits for fishing deep weeds and breaks at casting into 8 to 15 feet of water? We'll break this down in a couple different things.
Yeah.
So he says he's habitually fishing in 10 feet of water and going for the drop off. So when do you go shallow? When do you go deeper? Okay. I love fishing deep structure. It's not something a lot of people do. Everybody's looking for the shallow weed lines and they're going, oh, you know, bucktail. You know, hey, and Jay, guess what? If they're not up in the shallow weeds, we get in the truck and we go to the lake where they are, you know? But in that scenario, you go, when do I fish shallow? When do I fish deeper? It's the Buck Perry thing, right? Buck Perry, if you don't know him, he invented modern day trolling and structure fishing. The way Buck Perry broke it down in his stuff, in spoon plugging and all that, well, he didn't start deep. He started shallow and work your way out. Right? Shallow. If they're not up shallow, then they're at mid depth. If they're not mid depth, they're at deep. My grandfather used to always say, they ain't in the woods. You know, they're somewhere in the lake. They're somewhere in the water. I always have a tendency to start shallow just because you're eliminating height. Depth. But
What are we talking time duration in terms of this elimination?
Well, it doesn't,
I mean, what determines you? What, like, you
how
go
much
out
time?
And so,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, he's asking, you know, how long time? You know,
yeah. You know, let's say, zero response, no follows. You're not seeing bait fish up in there. It's just, it's okay. Not, and that's not looking good.
If I am starting, let's say I'm on, I did this on Lake Carroll, actually. Never been there. You know, right down the road from you.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, is it Lake Carroll, like whatever it is. Never been there. Me and Guri launched out there. I've never fished it. I said, this looks cool. Let's check it out. Immediately, I started shallow, right? What happened is nothing. Nothing, okay?
What happened is nothing.
The reason I moved out, and I actually connected with a fish in the mid-zone, that first break, you know, 12, 15, what we're talking about.
Okay.
Why I made that move was where you were at, solar lunar plays a huge key. So majors, minors, underfoot, you know, right? We fished through a major in the shallow littoral zone and nothing happened at all on a body of water that has a good population of fish, right? Reading the conditions is why, not because I didn't score during a major. What made me move is I looked at the conditions, right? So it's not about shallow and deep. It's about what are they going to be doing. So let's say on that day, it was high, bright sun, dead flat, calm, kiss of the death stuff, right? I was still hoping to find a shallow fish because they're typically more active. But I've not scored in the shallows. Now I'm facing adversarial conditions. I'm not seeing what I like. You know, we did have a little wispy wind, but it was like, we call them Simpsons clouds, the big old puffies. Right, just gross.
Cumulus.
I call them puffy. Deal with it. But there's some. There's some puffies. Deal with my puffy. But it wasn't good. And he went, yeah. If they were up here, something should have happened. Right.
It's not a musky looking weather day,
right,
for sure.
That's when I'm going to start on the mid to the deep. Right. So I always start shallow. I mean, unless I'm on a hot pattern or something like that, check. I mean, the shallower fish are easier fish. Why make your life harder by I'm Mr. Breakline? That would be my determination, if that makes any sense. So let's say in the course of any given day, I'm going to start checking shallow because they're easy to contact. And I said about the I know I'm saying depth, but it's the height of water that theoretically the baits could be running above their head, right? It is close quarters combat in the shallows. I know if I run a 5-inch shallow rate or a crane bait in 4 or 5 feet of water, all he's got to do is flick his tail and he's on it.
Right.
So I like to narrow the margins there. But as far as time allotment, I'm probably going to check the shallows. Let's say it's an 8-hour day. I'm going to start on it. And if nothing's clicking in the first little bit, I'm going to start making my moves. And I'm going to make sure that I'm trying to cue myself up in the best position with a bite window.
And I'm assuming this is earlier in the day, too. Like,
well, yeah.
Let's say fairly early in the morning.
Yeah, let's say it's early in the morning.
If you started at when the sun's at its highest at 1 o'clock, you might start a little deeper.
Right, but he's –
I guess I would, you
well,
know.
Yeah, and it's like, when do you start shallow, when do you start deeper? It's all conditions. But, however, I've come out in the middle of the day, and there's a lot of days I don't launch until midday. Jay, you know that.
Yeah.
And I go, first 15 minutes. I'm also reading bait, forage, wind, everything. So it's not a matter of do I fish shallow or deep. It's a matter of where do conditions that day point towards active fish, right? So you've got to be able to do it all, right? That's the same thing being said is, and this is a deeper topic. I think even Adam was gunning at, but I'll just go there, which is, okay, we have shallow, mid, and deep. We also have presentations, right? So you're taking, am I looking for a shallow fish that is hitting bucktails today, right? Or is it twitch bait? So to efficiently, before I give up on an area, And this is why I hate fishing alone. I love having clients in the boat. Like, if I got you in the boat, Jay, or Guru, whomever, I want somebody else in the boat so I can go, I'm going to twitch a shallow raider or a crane bait or whatever. The next guy's going to be throwing a bucktail, you know, and we will alternate. It's like, I will set, and this is how crazy I am, and I'll explain what I'm doing. To break myself out of neurotic tendencies, when I start on a new body of water, I'll set an alarm in my phone 20 minutes, right? Or stopwatch or whatever it is. 20 minutes on a bait, boom, keep moving. If you're not seeing fish, keep changing things up, but doing it the right way.
Yeah, and if you have determined zero, yeah, make sure with those two people in the boat, they're throwing different presentations,
right.
Because you got to try to determine what's going on.
You're looking for a pattern.
You got to find a response.
And that's the thing, we're looking for feedback. I mean, so
feedback.
And if I get a follow up shallow, I'm not leaving. Right? So it is about diminishing returns. You know, this is the know when to hold them, know when to fold them conversation. But
yeah.
I mean, you know, the thing is, this is starting that. So the game plan, this is like the time allotment game plan of shallow, mid to deep. Start shallow, you know, unless it's winter. I know there's so many caveats here. Let's just pretend it's up north. It's musky season. Start shallow. Use your bucktails, your topwaters, your crankbaits, your gliders. Make sure you've covered an area that you know that holds fish. If there's no feedback, there's no response, then move out. And half the time, what I will do is make the same pass and cast the other side of the boat. And it's shocking, right? Let's say I'm going down a weed edge and go, I'm going to cast off the weeds. We'll just turn to the other side. I call it a nature cast. And a lot of times I'll have myself or clients do it mid-thing is just throw the opposite way.
Longest fish I've ever had up,
yep,
came doing that.
Yep. Nature cast.
Okay.
Just throw it out. Yeah. Just throw it out the other side of the boat. And that's one way
you can determine. That's time to break out the plastics and those Medusas, yep, and those bulldogs or bondies or something when you're covering that deeper water. And yeah.
Like I said, I'm spinning. I don't have a definitive answer because there's no like, do this exactly. It's just smart planning. Another way to break this down, and Adam, and another way to target this, let's say we're looking at a bay. There's just a weedy bay. Everybody's seen them. Everybody fishes them, right? Start in that thing. Do your little horseshoe around it. Fish the edge one way. Turn the boat around. Fish the way. Fish it again with a different presentation, right? Then work out of it. Start with your mid-depth crankbaits, your bubber, and work your way out until you find where those fish are. That's the best way, like I said, without being there hands-on, like, and looking at a specific thing. That would be my game plan, is work out of a place. Don't start deep and then work in. Find them shallow, and you'll find them at those depths there. The other thing, he says, what are some good crankbaits for that 8 to 15 zone? In that zone, I am definitely thinking about Cisco Kids. I'm thinking about Depth Raiders. I love the Reef Diggers from Big Fork.
Mm-hmm.
Those are bad. And they will get down and dirty. What's that Giganto Slammer, Jay?
It's like he's got some 10-inch models.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
That's a nasty bait.
Yeah, he's got a couple of them. Yeah. Deep minnow and a deep shad.
Mm-hmm. I like those.
Those things thump, too.
Oh, yeah. It's like pulling a corpse through the water. You know, again, that would be some off the top on the crank end of things, but also too, don't, like you said, Jay, don't forget about the rubber in those zones.
That's primo rubber conditions. Yeah.
You just got to break it down. Again, read the water, read the scenario. That's how you know where the fish are. You know, a lot of times my gut instinct is right. You know that. Go ahead.
I was just thinking of one scenario. You mentioned a little bit ago. Okay, let's say you're on a lake that you know you've fished it a lot. You know, right, it's your only lake, or it's your favorite lake in northern Wisconsin, or whatever. And it's just like, of a handful of like 200 yard stretches that are really good,
mm-hmm,
and you know the stuff in between there has never produced. They might look similar, but they're just not as good. I'm talking like shoreline shallow type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever mess with that, right? So it's like, I'm just trying to think like you would and analyze this if you were going out there and, you know, let's say I take you out to a lake and say, okay, this stretch here is good from here to that point. It's mm-hmm. real good. we should definitely start here.
Right.
If you don't see anything, you go back and you do it again, unless the water's getting hammered. You go back and you do it again and you fish the opposite side of the boat or use a totally different presentation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
That's it. I mean, it's just, and that's the thing. As a guide, it's you lose focus of, you know, I'm there 7 days a week. I see small changes. I see this. I see that. I know where they're at, right? Everybody else is going out and they got one afternoon and they got to figure out where these things are at.
Yeah.
Okay. Smart place. Go to that. That's why you always see everybody beating the weed edge, because that's all they know. If they're not in the weeds, start working your way out and think smarter. Don't work hard and beat your brains out, right? Have the baits. I was going to say a second ago, usually reading the conditions, reading the weather and the water conditions will tell you where they're at. Usually my gut thought is right. But when it's not, immediately what I do, I don't go to panic mode. I go into reconnaissance mode, right? Get a follow, right? Don't beat the dead horse to death. I've watched guys take the same bait and beat the pain off of it for 8 hours and go, why didn't I catch a fish? I mean, it happens to all of us. And it's not about having a bunch of baits. I mean, if you give me a depth rater, a crane bait, a bucktail, a bulldog, and a topwater, and a suic, I'm good, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can implement those tools as search baits to find a pattern. You know, if I've spent 3 hours and I haven't seen a fish, change it up. Change up the – like if you're fishing weeds and there's nothing happening, go fish the rocks. If you're fishing – you know, you're fishing a bar or you're fishing a drop and it's not happening, get out of there, find mud, find transitions. Fish smarter, not harder. I know that sounds corny, but we all do that. We all have this thought that that fish is there. He's just not moving. And sometimes we're right and sometimes you're wrong, but you've got to make those smart decisions based on conditions. So if it's high, bright sun, dead flat, calm, that's, you know, we could go on forever on that. But that's it. Just think. And the big, I'm going into a freaking patterning rant here, but I'll tell you is this. Set markers for yourself. I was talking about setting alarms on my phone. Pace yourself. The biggest thing I work on as a guide is time management. Probably the biggest thing I struggle with is time management, but it's the thing I work at the most. We're going to do this for this amount of time, or unless something happens, because I am neurotic to the point of if I know the fish are there, I will beat the freaking spot to death, right? You've got to allot time, and that's the best way I can do it. It might take the fun out of this crazy musky trip, but going, okay, I'm going to spend X amount of time on this, and if nothing's happening, I'm going to force myself to change.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best thing I can do. Set up like road marks for yourself and say, if I'm starting at 8 a.m. and I don't have a fish in the boat or I don't have feedback by 10 a.m., I need to troll. I need to pitch rubber and then, you know, break it down into sections. Mm-hmm. That'll keep you focused. I will shut up now and move on to Justin. Justin says, I fish a relatively featureless river that has muskies in it. Deepest point is 8 feet. There's occasionally rice grass along the turns. My question is, where would I look for post-spawn muskies in a river like that? Are they going to sit on the shore? Would they be off the deeper edges? Where are these fish going to be in a relatively featureless river? Well,
okay.
Rice grass sounds like you. I don't know what rice grass is. Is that stuff they sell on the southern, like wild grass?
It's that emergent vegetation, I think probably is what he's referring to, that really doesn't provide any cover.
Right.
It's just like little sparse blades of grass kind of, you know, shooting out of the water.
I can
which all it does is mess up your lure occasionally, and it's really hard to
get off.
Once you get snagged, get it off. But that's a great question.
Here's the deal.
I don't know how to answer it, to be honest with you.
Post
8 foot deep max, he said too.
Yeah. Post spawn muskies are lazy muskies. That's it. They just went through their biggest project of the year is to get it on. You know, that's their whole point. That's their one job. You got one job, Muskie. Get it on.
Up in the shallows and slack water.
Right. I would be looking for slack water. I'd be looking for the warmest water. It allows them to get their metabolism up a little bit, eat some food, you know, and recoup, right? Look for lazy turns, lazy bends, no current, just eddies. You know, those fish are not going to be out there wiling. They're not going to be going crazy. Especially in that scenario, if it's only 8 feet deep, that ought to be pretty easy to find. You know, in my head, it's got more, it's got current. I don't know, you know, not that, but an 8 foot deep river sounds like it'd be boogie woogie in a little bit. Look for anything that's slack. And it's again, you guys hear me say all the time, caloric risk, caloric reward. A post spawn fish is not going to sit out there and just beat its tail off. Right. It's going to go in the shallows and it's going to be looking for little easy to eat meals to recoup. You know, don't be afraid to fish shallower than you think you should either. Right. It can be 18 inches of water and they'll be laying up in it.
Okay.
That would be my take there. Ultimate Musky Dude. Love the podcast. As far as making a game plan for the day, man, it's just like what, Jay? It's one right after that. It's like everybody's thinking the same thing. They're getting ready for season. As far as making a game plan for the day, how do you guys decide what you're going to do? Oh, my goodness. He says, what kind of structure? If you have a body of water that has, you know, multiple structures. When should I fish points, islands, reefs, bays, neck downs, canals? When do you fish rocks, weeds, timber? How do you fish typical? I mean, this is we're okay. Going right back there, Musky Dude. Apparently, I am going to, Jay, that's it. Next week, we are going to, it is all patterning. What do you think, Jay?
Oh, man, I don't know if I can handle that.
Can you, is it, it's super exciting. Super.
Oh, oh man, patterning.
Patterning.
Okay. Well, okay. So it, apparently, he's got a mouthful there. He's got a lot of information he's looking for. Right. Well, in terms of, you know, yeah,
it's like freaking, you know, we all have the same questions and it's the same thing.
Yeah, it kind of depends on where you're going.
Right. And so
for starters, obviously, if it's a lake or river and what type, but yeah.
We will do next week. I will make sure it is a epic patterning episode because I already hit on a lot of this stuff already. But we will just get into it really deep on how to plan a day. I think that will be important. So get ready for that. And this week I've already screwed it up by deleting the podcast and we're like 2 days late and I'm a jerk. So Dale says, hi, I'm heading to Lake Vermilion in Minnesota in late July, late June, early July this year. First time fishing.
Early. Yeah. Go ahead. Well, sorry.
Early July. It was late June, early July. Sorry. I'm stupid. I can't read. He says, first time fishing for muskies in Minnesota. Any suggestion on for baits and locations on Lake Vermilion? I can't give you like specific.
That sounds early to me.
Yeah.
From the guys I talk, it sounds early. It might be kind of tough. Most people wait to, Steve, have you heard this a lot too? I think more recently guys start taking their first trips, kind of like they were with Lake of the Woods. Remember how Lake of the Woods would always like heat up the last week of July.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's when all of a sudden they're responding to figure eights and they can catch them on top waters and right. It's peak water temps. It's right. You know, it's what it is.
The fish are moving. Yeah.
Yeah. That big body of water takes a while to heat up.
Dale, best thing I can do to tell you is hire a guide. I would not, you know, it's one of those things. If Vermilion's a big body of water, a lot of pressure, you know, I mean, the seasonality of that, I mean, depending on weather is going to, I can sit here and tell you, you know, Lake X Fat Bastards and Eagle Tails and Dive and Rise and this, that, and the other. Again, you got to read these situations. Typically, like Jay saying, it's got to fire up there a little bit. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah,
grab a guy.
One thing you could do that's kind of cheating and it's kind of lazy and it's kind of a dumb comment by Jaybird, but go out there and bring binoculars with you.
No, do not do
fish,
that.
Fish, well, just have them. I'm just saying, just have them handy. There's going to be people around. You never know. You might need them for an emergency. Awesome. People hit rocks out there, whatever.
Buddy, I see you looking at me with binoculars. I'm gonna hit you between.
I'm just saying, you know, 100 yards away, there's guys fishing. If you hear them hooping and hollering, you know, take them and see if they're fishing muskies.
It might
clue you into a pattern. I mean, because you're going to go out there if you really don't have solid information in the early part of the season for that intimidating body of the water. You're going to, and you can't hire a guide or aren't going to. You're just going to go out there semi-blind. There's going to be a lot of people fishing out there, and you'll run into somebody and be able to tell what kind of depth they're fishing at least. It might dial you in.
Remember the movie Sniper with Tom Berenger? Where he shoots the guy through his own scope, like Tom Berenger shoots the other sniper and it goes through his scope and into his eyeball. That is me shooting you if I see you look at me with binoculars, Jay. Cue the epic music. Jay says cheat. That's what Jay said.
Not cheating.
I know.
Just being observant.
Be observant. Like I said, that. I don't want to steer. I don't want to steer Dale in the wrong way. Jay's going to get you beat up at the boat ramp.
Were you looking at me, son? What are you looking at, boy?
But dig in. Basically, what me and Jay are both saying is acquire local knowledge. I'm saying pay for it. Jay's saying get you a pair of binoculars.
You're saying pay for it, and Jay's saying cheat.
Just get out. Hell, just follow a guider. And hey, are you a guide? Just follow him all day. Hey, what are you guys throwing over her? And if you do that, if you get caught with binoculars, just tell him your name's Cody Dalton. Anyway, the Elmer fan club. This he signed his emails. Just want to say thanks for the muskie mapping video. That was amazing. That's the kind of stuff that will put more muskies in my bag. Thank you. Can you guys do one on open water? Yes, we can, and we will if Jay will remind me. I will do
an open water mapping kind of issue.
Open locating fish. Mm-hmm. It can come into patterning.
Open water, yeah.
Peter says, hello, Stephen Paul. Spelled my name wrong, by the way. It's P-A-U-L, not P-U-A-L. Pual. Steve Pual.
Pretty close.
Pual. He says, I'm retarded. I'm tired. I'm sunburned, etc. He says, I'm a little podcast listener and love all the tips. I get the feeling that you hate tournaments. ... Explain yourself. Why don't you like tournaments? Only people I know that hate tournaments and speak bad of them can't compete. Maybe you should fish some and see what it's all about. Thanks. Looking forward to what you have to say on this meowter. Wow. Well played. All right. Peter, I don't hate tournaments. It is not... I don't think... Jay, have I ever really just crapped on him on here? He's making me feel like I've just really taken the Cleveland steamer on these things.
No, I don't think so. I remember discussing it with you a while back, but, you know, I mean, everyone's got their own opinion of them.
It's here's my thing. Without crawling down the rabbit hole, I have fished in a couple small ones. It's fun. The camaraderie, you know, may have won a John boat or two in my day. As far as some of the tournament scene, what I think that back it up. What I don't like about them is it is hard for us to differentiate in this sport, professional and amateur, right? I do not want to go to Three Lakes Chain and fish against Chaz Martin and donate $800 to Chaz Martin. Right,
because if anyone's going to catch fish out there, it's going to be him.
And it's not, I don't even think Chaz fishes any tournaments. Not his bag either. But that would not be a great scenario. So, hey, I'm going to roll up to Wisconsin, pay my money, and fish against a guy that's been on that water for the last 100 days. Right? Yes, there's a modicum of luck or a modicum of you got a hot hand or something like that. But I'm not a gambler anyway, and I don't like the odds. You know what I'm saying? Or if I go to Lake X and Lake X guide service owner is fishing it, and he's got 8 guides that work for him feeding him information, but yet the owner of Lake X guide service And I hope the guy that owns Lake X Bates is not named Lake X Guide Service. It's not, is it, Jay? I'm not trying to like.
It's John.
Okay, yeah, but that's I'm not talking about like Lake X Bates. I don't know called Guide. I'm just using that Lake X as a generic name for something. But Lake X Guide Service has 10 guides working at it, and the owner is participating in the tournament. So now you're fishing against 10 guides that have had probably two clients a day for 200 days. So you're fishing against thousands of hours, and this guy knows where all the fish are, and you're just coming down and paying to get whooped on. That seems to be a typical scenario that plays out. I think the tournament scene would be a way cooler place if there was a demarcation line against amateur and professional, and it'd be a far fairer thing, right?
In what way?
In the way that the information, right? Because if people are just doing these things for camaraderie and the experience, that's awesome, right? But in the regard, regard of, I want to pit myself against the best in the business. Man, you are at the deficiency of information that you have versus what they have is vulgar, whether you know it or not. You know, it's just like, that's just my take. That's one man's opinion on the thing. I just don't want to dump money down the hole to fish against somebody else. Am I afraid to fish tournaments? Absolutely not. Actually, we have something in the plans, probably going to do it next summer and fish some just for funsies. But that would be my take. Is like I said, I don't ever feel like that's a level playing field in any regard. I say that because I come from the land of like big bass tournaments for serious money. So it's one of those deals.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jay? Am I dumb? Am I wrong?
No, like I said, everyone's got a different opinion of them. I mean, they bring a lot of people together. I mean, I'm talking about bigger tournaments.
Right.
Not that long ago, there used to be a lot more. I'm talking, pre-COVID, there was a lot of tournaments, and things have started to tighten up a little bit. But, once late August starts in northern Wisconsin, I mean, every week in September and October, every weekend, sometimes there's four or five tournaments going on in our area.
Right.
Within like a 45-minute drive. It brings an intense amount of people together, brings a lot of people in the store, brings a lot of people into the area, that have to stay somewhere. And almost everybody has a great time doing them, win, lose, or draw.
All right.
And most of them lose. Most of them just like going out for the weekend, and they're meeting new people, and sometimes they get to talk to their idols, And if Joe Booker's fishing the tournament or something like that, and they get the chance to talk to him and actually basically, fish with him, maybe that's something the weekend warrior, could really look forward to and appreciate.
I don't know. Well, you said Booker. I don't think he's ever fished one.
No, couldn't think of a good example. Yeah. Like if someone really well known, like Joe or Pete or something like that. But
I don't know. Like I said,
of all type of walks and levels of muskie experience fish tournaments, and most of them do it absolutely just for the fun. They are not expecting to win.
Maybe my take is this: is it just like, I'm just doing it nonstop and it doesn't get my motor turning. You know what I'm saying? It's just like...
Well, like you said, you come from the land of big bass tournaments. Big money, big pressure.
Right.
I don't want that kind of pressure.
Well, it's not for me.
I'm done working or whatever, I want to relax. And then when I go fishing, I want to have fun doing it.
Well,
period.
And my thing for me is like, I'm fishing for a living. So,
exactly.
And going out to a tournament to do that to... you know what I'm saying? I don't get it.
Again, we got a couple tournaments around here. At work.
Yeah.
The great Elmer Jensen, stare down champion of, the world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
He is a part of some of the, there's a couple Eagle River, huge tournaments in Eagle River. One of them draws like 1,200 people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a cash payout tournament for the most part. They raffle off stuff. A lot of people donate, and we donate lures, and St. Croix donates some rods and stuff like that. There's various tournaments like that that have huge attendance, and people are strictly doing it for the fun. They get a trophy. It's a trophy tournament. They bring their kids and stuff like that. Hopefully turn their kids on to fishing, you know?
I got nothing against it. It's just, the guy that asked the question, like I said, I'm not trying to ever be negative about it. It's just my perception.
No. Yeah. I get it. No problem.
I talked to the hillbilly extraordinaire Cody Dalton. I think we were talking yesterday. I might go do one just for funsies, just so I can say, been there, done that, you know, got the t-shirt and participate. The other thing is this. I hate people, Jay. That's why I'm thinking about it and why I don't do it. And to be honest with you, the guy, who asked this? Peter, I hate people. And I'm thinking about, my idea of hell is a room full of musky fishermen.
Ooh, okay.
Literally. That's I just don't, you know, if anybody's been on the boat with me and guys that have listened realize, I just don't like people. I sort of fly my own flag, so I'm the last guy you're ever gonna see wearing a camo hat or talking. Like when I'm off the boat and we're not doing the podcast, we might be talking musky stuff, but I'm just not in that headset. It's just not me. That's probably what it is. Because I'm thinking about, why don't I like them? It's because I don't like people. That's why. it's true. I'm always honest on here. And go, really? I just want to stand around with a bunch of guys. They're going to be like, I saw a 65-incher on Florida Tobin. Anyway, Garen says, I'm just wondering realistically, how often does jigging something like a Bondi bait work? Is it just a fall thing, or is it a tactic you can use throughout the year or early in the year? What locations are good for jigging? Does the bait always need to be in contact with the bottom? I know this is a loaded question, but anything can help. Garen, I like Bondi baits. And
I know you do. You do well with them. They're really picking up in popularity the last few years in northern Wisconsin as well.
Mm-hmm. And if you're a hillbilly like me, Bondi baits in timber. Okay, so you can get into standing timber and vertically jig next to that and pick up fish that are just relating to it, right? I got another trick doing that near marker buoys. You know the chains they'll put to anchor marker buoys? Fish will relate to that.
No kidding. Yep. Okay.
And so I'm giving away a super secret here. Put the boat, spotlock it right next to a marker buoy. Don't get caught in the chain or rope, whatever, there, and jig it vertically there. You'll pick up fish doing that. You don't always have to vertically jig these things. Like, let's say that we're at a marker buoy and it's in 30 feet of water, right? I'm not going to immediately just drop that thing to the bottom and go, they're sitting on the bottom. I've picked up a lot of suspended fish next to vertical structure at mid depths. And you sort of look at the fish finder and go, you know, whether it be a thermocline thing or just a seasonality thing going, I know it's colder down there.
No.
Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, a lot of bonny fish come off suspended fish. You know, they're 12 feet of water over open water. I mean, 12 feet down, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and that's it. Just sort of get a read on it. What I've done a lot of times, whether it be standing timber, channel marker post, anything that's vertical, get right next to that thing, drop it down. I might start at 20 feet, bounce it for a little bit, bring it up in increments. I'm going to try to reel up 4 or 5 feet, jig, 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 reel up a little bit more, jig, 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 reel up. I love doing that because it's quick too. If that fish is there, you're going to be right on him, right? Whether it be channel marker, standing timber, all this stuff I've talked about. Get in there, jig it vertically, start low and move your way up. The shallowest I have ever caught a Bondi fish was 5 feet. It scared me to death. It was just like, I was jigging it. And we're talking, you know, you would almost see like the tail, like the little blade would come up like at the apex of my lift. Mm-hmm. If you've caught a fish on a Bondi bait, you know, those are some of those violent strikes you're ever going to encounter. They're gnarly. I mean, like, dude, there's a great video I'm sure most people have seen of John Bondi, like doing a promo on those. And he latches into a fish and You would think he's like selling it. And then when I first saw that video years ago, I was like, man, he's just really selling it. You know what I'm saying? Like, whoa.
Just all of a sudden his rod just doubled over. Right. I can kind of picture that video.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking? He's in a little floppy hat out on like Detroit River or something. Right when the baits came out, I went, oh, okay. It looks cool, but man, he's really just digging in.
It doesn't look cool.
And it doesn't.
To me, that came out. It's like, it's a glut. Yeah, if you guys have never seen it, it's just like this glob of plastic, right, with like a number 8 Colorado on the back sticking out.
Right.
And a couple treble hooks on the bottom. It's weighted, obviously.
Right.
It sinks at a pretty quick rate.
Yeah.
And it vibrates when you sweep up.
Right. And in that video, he sets that hook. And like I said, I just thought he's selling it. I was like, that's cool. But I don't, like, you know, he's really making this out like they're hitting that hard.
Yeah. Yeah,
dude, first fish, I was like, I ate crow bigger than shit. I was like, that is the hardest hit I've ever felt. Oh, my God. You know, I understand.
No, I've talked to John Bondi many times. Yeah, he's, man, as he caught a multitude of monsters on that. I'm not going to say it's a do-nothing bait, but it looks like it's a do-nothing bait. But the vibration is key.
Key, and you're getting in there. You're getting those zones where fish that are rarely targeted. But, no, it is not just a deep bait. You don't always have to make bottom contact.
Right.
Sometimes, I won't give away too many secrets, but sometimes the way to catch fish with that is, let's say I know from patterning that the fish are at the break lines of 12 feet, right? And I've picked a fish up, or they've moved it. Something has happened in a 12-foot zone. You can put that thing down there, reel it up about a turn and a half, get it off the bottom, and just slow drag it. And you will be shocked at the results of just dragging that thing just a hair over the bottom on break lines, right? So there's different ways to fish it. You don't have to just bop it up and down. Sometimes just get that thing down there and drag it deep, slow, slow, slow.
Well, sometimes, you know, get on a suspended bite. Try to locate at what depth the suspended bait, like Cisco's or whatever you have for forage, is at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're at 13 feet. They seem to be concentrated at 13 feet.
Yeah.
I'm running around some schools every once in a while. Pitch that thing out 30 feet. Let it sink for 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. Start reeling in. Sweep. Slack line, reel up a little bit, sweep. Yeah. Great way to pick off a suspended hog.
Well, in open water, I mean, it's, you know, not to, more secrets here. If you're really dialed in, I do this in the fall, and he asked if it's just a fall bait. It's not. It's viable year round, but you're talking about open water suspendos, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm seeing bait schools, and let's say the bait schools are at arbitrary 15 feet. Suspended, open water, there's marks under them, right? Mm-hmm. Well, trolling baits down 15 feet is tough sometimes. It really is. You know, getting it rigged up, you got a lot of line. But we're talking concentrated bait schools. Well, guess what? A line counter rod with a Bondi is a quick way to get exactly where you want to be.
Yep.
And you go, okay, I know I let out 16 feet of line. Bounce that, dude. It's deadly. Just like, you know, because a lot of times I've realized if I'm in open water and I'm looking.
Don't fish under them. Don't fish under them. Right.
But, you know, let's say you find an isolated bait school. We find this. You see it on the graph. You go, there's a bait school here. There's a big mark around it. Or maybe you don't even see the big mark, but you see it. Sometimes you'll drop a waypoint on it, and by the time you've set up your trolling pass, that bait school's gone.
Right. I believe it.
So a lot of times I will just grab a Bondi bait, stick it on the bait counter, or already have it rigged up, drop it down to that depth. I know the fish are at, you know, if my front graph says it on my trolling motor, add 2 feet, blah, 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 and you just go bop, 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 whack. And I've picked up a lot of fish and fast. Doing that, find them on the graph, drop the Bondi, jig it. One thing a lot of people do, and it's they will throw bulldogs in those situations, right? You hear about them, the suspended fish and stuff like that with the bulldogs.
Very common, yes.
But then you're counting it down, and you're guessing a little bit. Like I said, you've got precision control with the Bondis on a line counter if you're in that scenario. So yeah, there's a lot of versatility. There's any way that you choose to use that bait is viable. Heck, I've got people that have told me they've caught big fish just reeling them, straight retrieving them. You know, which is the same.
I've heard that too. Yeah.
Which is the same. Like, but again, I would probably throw the Royal Orba if I wanted that same effect. But like I said, I've drugged those things, slow crawling them on the bottom, and picked up fish. So it just
if you could. I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. If you guys ever have a vertical jigging presentation question, and you're thinking about calling the Muskie Shop because you might want to order something or whatever the case may be, or you have a technical question like vertical jigging, ask for the big ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that guy is dialed in. He's the king. I'm telling you, he's the king of vertical jigging. He loves it. He loves it for big fish.
Absolutely. Big ticket knows the way. Michael says, hey, Steve, I'm from your home grounds, actually right across the river, and I've been targeting muskies for a few years. And he said, I'm a creaker. So we got creaker. He says he's been out with some of the old timers creaking, and he's putting in his time, and he wants to know what are some good baits on these, you know, West Virginia country down homey crap waters. Where, you know, if you catch a 40-incher, you're the man, and that is true.
Well, I just talked to a creaker the other day, one of your buddies, Jason. Hey, Jason.
Jason.
Shout out. He's a creaker.
Creaker. I'll tell you, this time of year is, obviously, we're downsizing. I like crane baits still, always and forever.
Yeah.
Baby depth raider. Even in those creeks, man, get it down there, let it touch. Get it down there, let it touch. If we can ever get any more of them done, and we're trying our best, is the big norm is made for that. Getting in the timber, you know, stay shallow. Don't burn the baits, right? But that would be it. Those small shallow running minnow baits. I mean, that's the thing. If you're fishing that water that's skinny like that, you do not need baits that are going to be like deep divers. You're just going to get into a mess in
storm
the
flat sticks.
Well, and that's a place to go, because especially if you've had the rain we have, it is muddy.
Mm-hmm.
It's stained up water, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The loudest friggin' bait on planet Earth is a storm flat stick.
Yeah.
Chugga, chugga, chugga. And that would
clank, be clank, a clank, a
clank. Clank. They're cheap. They're loud. They work in the creeks. That would be one there. We have so many, and we got to wrap her up here because it's just going on forever. Isaac says, I'm wondering how often do you use the spot locking feature on your trolling motors to work a spot and then shift a ways and then spot lock again, blah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. He said, I've used this tactic on and off to allow the most concentration of fishing without dialing in the boat. He said, it works really well on reefs and main length points. Wondering if you guys use this or have a different twist or a way for me to improve using spot lock to catch more muskies. I live and die by spot lock in windy conditions, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It's convenient. There's those days where I've just absolutely decimated my knee, just can't walk the next day before we had spot lock. So obviously facing into the wind seems like a no-brainer. If you're fishing any rivers, spot lock is deadly to hold a location to really pick things apart. I don't necessarily use it unless there's enough wind or wave action to pick things apart, right? On a daily basis. The one thing I can tell you with spot locking is don't, there's a certain element of the boat control, right? And that sounds goofy, of getting blown in and out of things sometimes, the old school way of doing it, where you might pick off a fish you wouldn't have otherwise. Like, our boat control can be really perfect. Now, I've got all the crap on my boat where it doesn't even need me, Jay, right?
Yeah,
I can punch in, literally put the route in, and the trolling motor will take me on this perfect route, and it will keep me on the 10-foot break line all day long. But
punch a couple buttons, and you can do what you want to do. Welcome, that's concentrating on the actual fishing part.
Right. Welcome to the future. However, I don't use it. And the reason being is I like that variance. I'm off the weeds. I'm into the weeds. I'm in the timber, off the timber. That's one thing that I think about, is like just those variables of moving. It changes your angles and changes your cast. So I like the lack of perfection in my routes. The same could be said about spot locking, because I immediately think about reefs And Canadian reefs, it changed for me when spot lock. If anything that changed for me is being able to fish a reef with spot lock in Canada is the baddest stuff ever. You know, before literally we were either taking anchors or you're taking pop shots, right?
But
two of the biggest fish I've ever seen taken were on old school trolling motors when we're getting blown off the thing and the caster landing short. You get what I'm saying, Jay, about like, don't sit there and just do this perfect. I'm perfectly locked. I'm exactly one cast off this reef and everything is perfect. And I've fished it and there are no muskies here, and then not get blown off of it and make a pop shot and catch a monster. Right. The variable of the boat moving all the time's changing your angles and all that stuff. So when I first got spot lock, I fished perfectly. And yep. I went, I'm not seeing the same amount of fish. And now that I'm just running the thing. If I need it, just again, it's a lofty concept, but just don't get in that habit of everything is perfect. I am spot locked at all times.
Yeah. And when it comes to perfect, I think we try to get dialed in with a spot.
Yeah.
With this particular feature that we want to fish or weed line. And we ended up getting too close to it.
Yeah.
Almost blowing it. Whereas more fish come off just off that structure a little bit more, like we're just relating to that story with an old school trolling motor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys backed off the spot a little bit and
yeah,
you know,
got blown
fish,
off.
The fish
of
is
it.
A little bit off the structure yeah. more than you thought it would probably be.
Right. And again, I'm beating a dead horse here, but that danger of my trolling motor will lock on exactly this brake line. Well, you better know exactly where the fish are at, you know, and just mm-hmm. let it play. One thing I can tell you, you know, that I have done is if I am fishing points and things of that nature, you're doing everything right and spot logging is a great way to do it. Is that if the wind's blowing into a point, face the boat into it and fish out of the back of the boat, throwing straight out of the back is really convenient. Again, you guys, we were just talking about jigging, man, using the spot lock feature for vertical jigging. If you really have a good hull or a good grasp of where you're at is great. It's deadly for vertical timber and all that stuff, but sounds like you're doing it right. Just allow for some variance in there. All right. Tegan says, I'm a kid and can't afford a ton of lures and fish small rivers with muskies that are full of snags. You know, he said there's just a bunch of junk in the water. What should I be using? What are some affordable lures for somebody fishing rivers? Jay, what do you think? I'm going immediately. You already mentioned the bait, which is the Storm Flat Stick, which you can buy one of those for like $12.
Yeah. Most of them are under $15. He said, what'd you say? He said there's a lot of junk in the water.
Snags and
oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
It's full of snags.
You know, a typical kind of creaker situation, tight creaker. Quarters. Yeah. There's blowdowns. There's
yeah. crap. Might be an old mattress.
Spinner baits, you know, anything right. with a, you know, the bent arm spinner bait traditional presentation mm-hmm. is going to be ideal because you're slowing down.
Yep.
You know, spinner baits almost always are going to run out of the box slower than your
yep.
average inline presentation bucktail.
Spinners.
And they're weedless. They don't have treble hooks on them.
What's that?
Great around timber.
Ace baits is what quickly comes to mind. Slop masters.
Ace baits and rad dogs yep. and slop masters. And yeah, there's so many good spinner baits. Ghost tail makes a nice one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the thing is single hooks, if you're fishing a lot of snags, you're going to be good to go with the single hook. Just let it sort of slither through things. Mm-hmm. Those flat sticks, that's a budget bait of all get out.
Yeah, and buy a good topwater. Get something, get a mm-hmm. tail rotating bait and right. run that slowly around that stuff and yeah. stop and go with it. Those are the most fun strikes. You're going to have a riot fishing that thing.
And the thing I can tell you about fishing timber or snaggy places, get dialed in and immediately I think, you know, if it's budget conscientious, I would be thinking about that, like, is it a 6 or 7 inch slammer, Jay, or does he make both?
Yep, there's one of each. Okay. Yeah, the 7 inch has a flat lip. That's got more of a, you know, hard wobble to it.
Hard wobble.
I'd go with a 7.
Okay, so a 7 inch slammer, right? It's not that yep. super expensive. It's very buoyant. And so if you're fishing around timbers and snags, get dialed in, and when you feel something that's not a fish, you go, that is a stick or that is a stump.
Mm-hmm.
Stop right. reeling and let it float out and start reeling again.
Yep.
And a lot of people struggle with being dialed in enough to tell the difference between cover and structure, right? People setting hooks into stumps and trees and logs, and you go, that's not a fish. if you can get dialed in on that, and this is one of those benefits of being a creaker here, you lose so many baits, you start getting dialed in, go, that's a stick, that's a weed, that's a this, that's a that, that's an old shoe, you know, you feel all this different junk, you know. And you feel that vibration, that tick, you're going to be a better fisherman for it because you can work in the nastiest stuff. You know, working a rock reef is nothing when you're pulling it through laydowns and timber and trees and garbage. So,
yep,
all right, we'll get through one more here. And then we got to go again, guys. I apologize for the tardiness of this week's episode. I'm an idiot. The last one is Henry. When you guys talk about 9-foot shield rods, are you talking about the telescoping rods? I really want a shield rod, but I'm leery of telescoping rods. I can tell you, beyond a shadow of a doubt, there's nothing to be hesitant about a telescoping rod.
Not at all.
We are talking
we've had zero failure on those, by the way.
I have been fishing telescoping rods now for 3 years, I think. 2 years.
Okay.
When they first came out, because my old boat did not have a monster rod locker. And I have no problems with them. Every day on the boat with clients, we're fishing 9-foot shield rod heavies, right? I collapse them every day. I pull them out one time, line it up, boom, done. It's simple. Just look down the rod, sight it in. It takes 2 seconds. You know, if you're going to fish multiple days, just leave it locked in and you give it a little tap and it goes out. I had the, I caught a 55-inch muskie on one of those super cheap, those Akuma rods, Jay.
Yeah.
Right, EX last series, summer, right, with Guru. Here is just a Mondo Hondo, big as they come musky, on a telescoping rod. It didn't budge. It didn't flinch. It didn't do anything. If you're fishing bigger fish than that, you might want to worry about it. But if you're fishing 55 inches and below, you'll be okay.
Yep. You're just fine with them. It's a great choice.
I have no problem with the telescoping rods at all. I was leery at first. To me, it's awesome because I now have more rods in my boat than I ever wanted to have in there because they all fit. You know, it's like pile them in there, everything you need. You know, the only thing I knew of is I got a call from, God, I've mentioned him too many times, but we talked to him yesterday, Cody Dalton. He left one in his boat and it got frozen and sub-freezing. He also was, you know, is just like, yeah, I just had it. Yeah, your rod's frozen shut because it's freaking like 5 degrees outside. So he ended up, I think he put it in his truck for a couple minutes and warmed it up, and it was just fine to go. But other than that, you know, there's nothing. You don't have, it's not going to slip. It's not going to spin. I mean, that is the wave of the future. And the reason being is this, Jay, you know why? Shipping.
Well, yeah. Transportation. I mean, you know, you're talking, when you start talking about 9-foot rods, you ever tried putting a 9-foot rod in a car? They don't like it.
No, they don't like it.
The shipping costs are going through the roof. It's not pretty shipping these oversized items anywhere.
Well, that's the thing, is even the manufacturers getting them to the stores. The stores, that is the way of the future, just because of anybody you're going to buy something from, they got to get it to you. If you don't walk in and get it, I mean, that's the thing, is before the shield rods, I was looking around forever when they first came out, those 10-footers, right?
Yeah.
Trying to get a hand on it, literally a one-piece 10-foot rod when they first came out. My options were driving 15 hours to get one because no one would ship it.
No one.
And now you've got multi. So that is just if you want to know why it's going to that, it's so consumers can get the rods because they can fit them in the same rod tubes. Heck, for years, I had a two-piece rod that was awesome, right? I actually bought it in Canada. It was an off-brand, but it was a great rod. I actually still have that rod. It's two-piece. It doesn't matter. It's not going to change anything. Sensitivity is great on those rods. I got no qualms with them. I don't know. Don't be afraid of them. They will work. Again, I suck. I'm sorry I'm so late this week. Jay, apparently we're doing the Super Patterning Podcast next week.
Super patterning.
Super patterning.
And there's going to be a brand new Muskie Shop video probably just before the podcast comes out next week.
Prepare yourself.
And this thing is going to be shockingly different.
Shockingly different. Folks, thanks for putting up with us. Later.
Bye-bye.